This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Nick Galifianakis was an unexpected pick for politics in the 1960s here in the South. He was the son of two Greek immigrants and had a name that required two political pins to fit it all. Despite the odds, he rose to prominence, first as a member of the North Carolina General Assembly, later as a U.S. congressman. A new book, Pick Nick, explores the legacy of Nick Galifianakis, including his impact right here in North Carolina with the creation of Research Triangle Park. John Simonci is the author of the book and a retired professor of history at UNC Chapel Hill. John, welcome to the program. Nice to have you here.
Well, thank you, Frank.
And Nick Balakin and Galifianakis is with me in the studio as well. Thanks for joining us, Nick.
Thank you.
And the political junkie Ken Rudin is still with us. So, Nick Galifianakis, what was your reaction when you heard that your neighbor John here wanted to write a book?
Well, he approached me about a year ago and said, it's time for the book. And I said, what do you mean? He said, Mr. G goes to Washington. I said, well, Jimmy Stewart has already done that. And and so he was serious about doing a historical view. I was part of the effort to take North Carolina out of the stigma of being a southern state of the sort that was improper for a long time. And I said, well, Jack, who's going to buy a three-page book?
Well, let me talk to the author. Let me talk to John about this and talk about that three-page book. What is it about Nick Galifianakis' life that makes you think we need to have a book about it?
Well, it's and Nick himself as a personality was attractive, and then the times. So merging really the very attractive personality with a very significant historical period in the changing complexion of the South appealed to me as a historian.
Tell us about that time period that we're talking about and sort of what was going on politically here in North Carolina and the rest of the South.
Well, the Nixon victory in 1968 was sort of founded on a Southern strategy. And part of that Southern strategy resulted in the long run, as we can see even today, in a solid Democratic South moving to a solid Republican South to a large extent. And Nick's presence in the North Carolina legislature from 1960 to 66 was a attempt on his part to sort of create as much as a single representative who was familiar with the task of making legislation to change the image of the South. And so Nick not only had an unusual name for a Southern representative, but he had an agenda that sort of matched Governor Terry Sanford's agenda, working with a state that was slow to move in the direction that both the governor and Nick wanted, but clearly there were signs that this seemed to be a possibility.
Well, and you make the point that at the very moment that George Wallace was the governor of Alabama, yeah, Terry Sanford was the governor of North Carolina, right, making a speech almost a week after George Wallace's segregation, now segregation forever speech, in which Terry Sanford, governor of North Carolina, says we must end segregation. Mm-hmm. So clearly the North Carolina was not identified with the Deep South, right, but a long way to go. So Nick Galifianakis, with a funny last name like that, coming, well, your parents coming from Greece, what made you decide to run in 1960, and how much resistance did you get, or at least caution did you get in 1960 when running for the General Assembly?
I suppose it goes back to high school, where I was involved in politics back then. There was a ninth grade teacher that sort of inspired me a little bit. She says, I think you'd like to be a congressman someday. This was back in high school. Well, I didn't pay too much attention to that, but I was pretty active in high school. And I was selected to go to Boys State. I don't know if you're familiar with that program. It's students from all over the state go and play government for one week. And my two counselors who were in law school at the time were Terry Sanford and Bill Friday. It was they who decided, is it possible that we can get somebody elected with a name like that? And it turned out that I became governor of Boys a boys' state with two wonderful friends. That
I nearly went to a boys' state in New York State, but it was a far different situation than this. Tell me about this because this idea of a blessing actually precedes your high school days. Your mother, very early in your life, decided that you were going to be, that you were destined for greatness.
She was a very religious person and a wonderful human being. Both of my parents were extraordinarily good people. They always worried about feeding somebody. And you get a little bit of that developing in five sons that they had. I'm the oldest of five, and my father got disappointed four times in a row after the fourth. And very recently, my son had a little girl, my granddaughter, which is the love of my life, and I didn't want to drift too far away from what got me interested. I was teaching some at Duke. I was teaching business law,
mm-hmm.
and I was a staff attorney instructor in the law school. Unbeknown to me, 36 of my colleagues collected 50 cents apiece and went down and filed for me to run for the state legislature, unbeknown to me.
Mm-hmm.
So the chairman called me and said, Nick, you got 10 minutes before closing time. Because you have to sign the proper papers.
It's one thing to declare, but you have to actually show up and sign. And you didn't know it had been done.
And I said, it's a joke. I said, it's a joke. It's nothing. He said, well, I'm holding the office open for 10 minutes. If you want to withdraw afterwards, you withdraw. So I rushed down there and signed the document. I said, well, what do I do now? And there was a fellow by the name of Judge.
Forgive me for interrupting, but that, of course, is that's the last line in the movie The Candidate, right? You remember that. This is, what do I do now? Now that I've been nominated, what do I do? Fascinating that it actually came out of your mouth. So there you are. You've signed, and you're actually a candidate for the North Carolina State Legislature in 1960. What did you do then?
I was told to go down Main Street and talk to lawyers and talk to doctors and talk to people working in the shops and whatnot. And I didn't get a very good encouragement about running. And this expert in politics who stayed in the lobby of the Washington Duke Hotel with cigars in there, and he was sort of a political wizard, et cetera. He said, well, there's no way you can win. He said, Gene Brooks is the son of the party head in Durham, North Carolina. And whatever he says, that's what goes. So I then decided to go out into the county and see what people think. And I approached Bob Cook, a farmer who was on a tractor, and I said, hi, I'm Nick Galifianakis, and I'm running for the state. He says, what? He said, son, people don't cotton up to Jews around here. And I said, well, some of my best friends are Jews.
You don't happen to be, but yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you, Ken Rudin, because I know you're on the line, and that we're talking about the early part of Nick Galifianakis' career, 1960, sort of flies in the face of conventional wisdom down here and actually wins that seat. And I know you probably have some questions about him in the context of that early victory.
Well, first of all, I am so thrilled to be on the same show as Nick Galifianakis. As you know, our longtime button collector and political junkie, I remember his campaign against Everett Jordan in 72, his campaign against Jesse Helms in 72. I remember all that stuff. I just think it's remarkable. I remember when he was running for re-election to Congress. First of all, it's interesting. It was the Democrats who spent all their time, once Nick got elected to Congress, and I guess 66, it was the Democrats, the Democratic legislature, who tried to draw his district out of existence because they didn't want this liberal, and of course he was a moderate, but they called him this liberal. They didn't want this liberal in Congress. It was the Democrats who did so much to torture him. And let me just tell you one quick story. I mean, there's so much I want to say about his campaign, but when I was down at an event at WUNC a couple of years ago, and I've mentioned Nick Galifianakis Galifianakis many times on my program because his campaign against Helms was so classic. When I came down to WUNC, there were several people in the audience who still remembered Nick Galifianakis' campaign songs, and they were singing it at the event. They were singing his Nick Galifianakis song at the event, and I said, look, this is many decades later. Obviously, Nick Galifianakis made a big impression on you because you still remember these songs all these years later.
Well, thank you for that information. That has to be expanded on the next book that Jack is going to write.
John, let me ask you about that, though, again, in context. How was, from your perspective as a historian, how was Nick able to do it, not only that victory for the General Assembly, but then make the leap against the over and against the establishment's view? Remember, it was the Democrats who were the hardcore segregationists. They were the ones who were resisting any kind of progress. It was Democrats. And here's a guy who's running under that label and making progress. How did he advance like that?
I think it was inherent in his personality. I mean, the way in which his grade school teacher said, you should be a politician. Nick was an old-fashioned type of politician who felt that if I could make contact with you, if I could shake your hand, you would be on my side. And to a large extent, he coupled that gregarious nature with a winning way, that he felt that politics was a serious business, but at the same time, you could have fun as a politician. And so, therefore, he used gimmicks. He turned Galifianakis, which seemed to be, as a name, a detriment, into an asset. And using that essential political approach within the context of old-fashioned politics, what's going to happen to Nick is that in 1972, not only does he have to expand his appeal statewide, which meant that old-fashioned, you know, contact politics was going to have to be supplemented by a new type of media politics that Nick ran into essential difficulty running against a person who was media savvy.
Well, let's talk about that 1972 race. At this point, Nick, you decide to run for U.S. Senate. Many, many, many remarkable things about that race in 1972. We'll begin with one of the most remarkable. You decide to take on the incumbent Democrat in the nomination process. B. Everett Jordan had been serving since the 1950s, a long time senator from the state of North Carolina, and you decide to challenge him in the primary for the Democratic nomination to Senate. What made you think you could win?
Well, it didn't start off being my idea to run for the Senate because Senator Jordan and I were very good friends. He began to take note. I was among the early members of Congress that were opposed to the war in Vietnam, which was unpopular, and Jesse was eating me alive on television, on radio, about being soft on communism. And actually, when it came time for filing for the Senate race, three people had already filed against him. I had a conversation with him. He asked me to come by his office and talk to me, and he said, Nick, I switched my views about Vietnam based on what the discussions you and I have had, which centered around when I would go to clubs and talk, I would ask the question, how many of you know where Vietnam is? No hands went up in several places. And he really took great note and said, I'm against the war in Vietnam too. And he said, you go ahead and get in the race. Don't mind me. You go ahead and get in the race. There are already three candidates that have announced. My administrative assistant is disappointed in all of this because he knows that I'm sick, and normally senators are appointed, not elected, somebody dies and the governor appoints a successor, and so you have a continuity.
It's kind of interesting. He had survived colon cancer, and nobody really expected that he would survive six more years. But since you say it was common practice to allow that to happen. First of all, the seniority in the Senate would benefit the state. Secondly, it allows the governor then to make that appointment. Fascinating stuff. And Ken Rudin, I want to ask you, because not only does Nick Galifianakis prevail against an incumbent Democrat and win that nomination after a runoff,
which was a shocker.
That was a shocker. Well, Jesse Helms had changed parties, and he really unseated or undid the Republican establishment in winning his nomination and then ultimately the election, right? The Republicans.
Well, let me tell you what Nick Galifianakis was up against in 1972. We talk about North Carolina changing, and it was starting to change. But when he ran against Everett Jordan, for example, for the nomination, it was the same day of the presidential primary where George Wallace clobbered Terry Sanford. Terry Sanford was seeking a comeback to run for president as a favorite son in North Carolina. George Wallace, this is I guess a week or so before the assassination attempt, but George Wallace clobbered Terry Sanford in the primary. So this is what the Democratic Party looked like in North Carolina in 1972. George Wallace winning at the same day where Nick Galifianakis won. Of course, he had to go into a runoff. The same day Nick Galifianakis was running for the Senate against Everett Jordan. And then in November against Jesse Helms, you think of all the Republicans who are saddled with Donald Trump in 2016. Nick Galifianakis not only had a run against Jesse Helms, but he also has the top of the ticket George McGovern, who is not the most popular guy in 1972 in North Carolina. So I'd love to know how Nick managed to stay away from McGovern while trying to adhere to North Carolina values in running against Jesse Helms.
I never met Senator McGovern. I was scheduled to be at a press conference at the Kennedy Center, and it was set up for me to appear at a certain hour. I was there with my wife ready to have the television program go on. When Senator McGovern arrives and steps right in front of me and takes over the press conference, that's the extent of my association with Senator McGovern.
His being in front of you was the only lead he ever had in that election. But let me ask you this. It did come down to a version of race and racism. It was a close race all the way through, and then the campaign ad, vote for Jesse Helms, he's one of us, and he's running against somebody with a Greek last name. Everybody knew what that meant, and it was success for Jesse Helms, and I guess the beginning of a campaign of overt racism that kept him in office for a long, long time.
Well, he would not appear on any program with me. He would not want a debate, and he always would inquire whether I was going to be president. If I was going to be president, he would not attend a particular function. I was told by reporters that he held most of his conferences in at the churches. And vote for him because he's one of us, meaning Christian. What does that make me? And I noticed that the press was upset more than I was. I wasn't paying attention. I thought I'd just keep plugging forward and quit worrying too much about this or that. And the other thing, if I may add, my campaign chairman, he said, Nick, we need a lot of money. We can prevail. And the banks are willing to give you plenty of money, but they won't give it to us. You have to go collect it personally. I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go take cash and leave the impression that I'm going to have to, I have a premature obligation to do what I'm told, and I don't want public office that bad. And I was really disappointed that so much of politics revolves around big money when there's so many competent people to be president of the United States. The universities are full of political scientists and other people that should be running for public office.
I'm going to leave it right there. We are out of time, but I'm so pleased to have been able to talk with former U.S. Congressman Nick Galifianakis and retired history professor John Cimaci. John's new book, Pick Nick, explores Nick's unexpected political odyssey, and you can find out more about it at our website, stateofthings.org. I want to thank both of you and Ken Rudin. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you. It was an honor.
Just ahead, hip-hop music, Coolie High, live on the State of Things. Stay with us.